I have a vivid memory of working with a self-portrait when I started as a student of Odd Nørum.
Usually one starts with a self-portrait and ends with a self-portrait.
Of course. And landscapes can be self-portraits also that we can come into. But I painted myself in not something as multicolored as this, but some kind of thing. And I had one movement here and then a similar movement here. So it was all symmetrical. And then Odd, of course, pointed out to me that you must never have complete symmetry because it just dies. And I think that's what I wanted to talk to you about, this whole idea of balanced imbalance, because you need to understand that principle before you can compose any kind of, well, landscape is your major interest. And I think especially there you can see that you cannot balance everything completely symmetrical because it just dies.
You're looking for a symmetry in living creatures, in people. You want to see a symmetry because when you see it, you know it's a healthy person. When you see a
Healthy.
symmetric person, you see a healthy person, more or less. So you are looking for symmetry all the time because then you see a living creature or an animal or. But when you are painting, it can be very dangerous because why are you painting the other half of the painting? It is useless. You could have painted half of the painting and it's good. So you have to give something in addition to the composition.
Yeah, so I'm still trying to understand. I think I understand it, but I'm still trying to understand what Constable is saying when he says that you must not go out into nature with a preconceived idea of a motif or how to compose it, because nature can compose much better than you can.
No, I do not agree.
Yeah. But I think, well, I think what he's talking about is that obviously he learned from studying Ruysdael and his Dutch painters, but you can suddenly see something that you were not prepared
That
for.
is something Constable made. He chose his motifs in an area where he lived. He knew the area very well. So he was choosing because he had composing in mind and then went to the place and observed.
Yeah, I think if you hear that quote by a constable and you think, oh, I don't need to study anything, I can just go out and feel,
No, then
then.
you, as Mr. Nerdrum said once, when he would have had money as a visitor, he would have stand outside the house and painted the landscape as he did everywhere, without any interest in what it is for a kind of landscape. It was a very good thought there. So when I try to develop my Norwegian landscapes, then I had in mind that I didn't want to make landscapes at all. I wanted to study the background for my compositions first, and then I got stuck into it for a while. But I wanted to understand the surroundings because I think it's a very bad idea to study your figures and don't have a clue why they are sitting naked at especially this place. So it has to have a meaning. And then I sat there with maps over Norway because I knew that because of the mythology, it had to be a certain area where we have archaeological findings in the landscape from this period after and during the Ice Age. And then I sat there and tried to decide where I was going to go on tour. And usually I studied my map for about 1 hour a day when I was on tour, before I was on tour, to learn the landscape. And I decided this is maybe the motif I need for my painting. Then I went up there and had control. Is it that what I expected or not? So it's always both sides. Mm. You have to know why you are there. So the best thing is when you are at home, more or less, it's like in folk music, try to find your motives at home. When you're not able to do it, so find your place where you feel at home.
Find another home, yeah. Yeah. I have increasingly difficulties understanding this idea that you come to the place, oh, let's go out and paint. So
it's without so any, impressionistic.
Yeah, without any kind of interest, it might be whatever. I mean, you have this, this is drifting a bit off what you're saying, but you have this plein air competitions where they paint on the beach and there's a boat there. Oh, paint the boat because it happens to be there.
I would never do this. Yeah. I tried it once when I began with oil painting, and, but it was the hometown of my father and my sister. Hmm. So I had a relation to certain places, but I wanted to paint the castle and the church at once, and something like that. Yeah. And it's beautiful there, but you never succeed.
Yeah, but I think if you do that, you lose sense of this whole, that's what, something I really am concerned with. The rhythmic connection. I mean, if you take an example from figure painting, Caravaggio's Martyrdom of Matthew, which is like the school example of how do you make a composition with figures. You see this whole idea of rhythmic connection between these different elements. And I think this is also something that you're really clever at doing in the landscapes, to not just think compartmentalized, but get the general rhythm through the whole image. And I think you lose that if you just think, this image.
We both agree in that symmetry, especially in landscape, is a problem. Mm. You have it in gardening, but about this we can talk another time. I think a painting should be asymmetric in any way. You have your rules. You have the what it's called.
The corners? Or the sides?
The sides. You have the sides. So this is what you're painting. It's flat. You have these sides and this is your theme. You're making something two-dimensional and your goal is to make it as beautiful as possible so that people see a worth in looking at it, a value. So this is maybe the axiom, the fundamental principle we can agree on, that we have a flat surface for painting. Mm. And the rest is up to you, and up to you deciding in which tradition you want to stand or if you find a better solution. But symmetry is way too easy. Because you want to find the animal in the landscape. Mm. So it's better with an asymmetrical approach. And then you have to find the balance in it. And this is the difficult goal. So how do you balance something which does not stand naturally, perpendicular? So this is why I think it is very important not to use mirrors in controlling your composition when you're painting. Don't use mirrors when you're painting landscapes or even people. It can be very dangerous because when you naturally see a painting in reality, then you see the right side of reality and not the mirror side. In the mirror side, you see that it's unbalanced in another way. And on the right side of your mirror, you see that there is balance. You should not go to the other side to see how all falls apart.
Well, are you saying that if you then start looking in the mirror and you see there's an imbalance, you start to correct that, then you get something that is way too symmetrical? Or could
no, it end up... If You're getting lost behind the mirror.
Yeah, because I use it, I have to say, I use it a lot to get fresh eyes on it.
Yeah, this and is the problem. Well, you should not get fresh eyes on the problem. when you're going out there, and nowadays everyone has a kind of camera with him. When you're going out there and you take a photograph, you can turn it around, mirror it, and it will, most of the photographs will look as good as reality or the right photograph when you mirror it. And the goal is to make a composition which is in reality balanced and in a mirror a disaster. And this is what good composition is, I think. So one of the best composers, I love him very much just for that, is Vermeer. And in reality, you see the painting and it looks balanced. Take a mirror with you or mirror it on your screen and you will see that everything's falling apart. This is a good sign. It should be a disaster in the mirror.
Well, okay, so it's kind of, I'm trying to understand what you're saying. It's kind of as if, you know, when you are too concerned with composing and it's clear to see that it's composed, that becomes the foremost element, what is most immediate, that you see that there's a composition, things are lined up in too obvious a way, then you're more concerned with seeing that compositional contact than seeing the life of it, or it becomes an abstract element instead of something that is living.
Everything's abstract here. Mm. We are talking about abstraction.
Yeah, but it mustn't be too obvious. I mean, it's like, if you read, for example, this is very low level, but Kandinsky was so concerned with Cezanne's Bathing Women because he revitalized the triangle, meaning that he just made it very, very, very obvious.
Yeah, the bathing women, when you don't have an idea what to paint, you're painting naked women because they are selling and then they're bathing. Yeah. And she made these triangles.
But that's composition as an abstract element. You see it clearly as a composition. You don't see the how living the image is. Of course, it's painted in the wrong way too. But it's
Then we can find a solution. Maybe that you have the one side which is reality, the balanced painting, and the energy, the depth, when you find your way through a landscape. When everything's falling apart and the wind is coming in, you see in the mirror. You can try it with some of my landscape compositions. Mm-hmm. They are looking balanced, and when you see them in the mirror, you see that there's a force drawing you into the painting.
Mm. So like this sort of hidden counterpoint.
No, that you see the main energy in the mirror. But when you're painting through the mirror, you're destroying it because you want to, as a human being, to balance it in the mirror. And then it goes wrong in reality.
Okay, well, it's kind of like what you see in... this is a typical amateur mistake. You have them paint from a reproduction or a portrait, which is like this, and then they paint it frontal. You see it in three quarters, and they paint it from the... Yeah. They correct it.
They correct it.
Yeah, yeah. Or someone like
it's a good
this,
point.
They paint it like this. Or the eyes are like that, that angle, and they paint them straight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like that.
Okay, I think I understand what you're saying. And you need that hidden imbalance, this under the seeming balance that when you look straight at it.
But try it with good compositions, or you consider as good. Mm. How does it look in the mirror?
But then that's strange in a way that I remember one, what's the name of it? It's an image that painted that Odnar made in Iceland. And there's this woman there in this sort of cocoon, and there's a landscape with the boat. And I remember one of the things he did towards the end was you had that loop going up, like a cloud going up to the sun, And then he reflected that and mirrored it, so it went the wrong other way in that the other corner of the painting. So that was a clear symmetrical echo, but it was based on being imbalanced or very rhythmical.
Yeah, you can do this, but this all these methods were developed in the Renaissance times already. Mm. And there were fun games, especially in Raphael paintings, where he uses a certain constellation and turns it around and repeats. Mm. So
yeah, because there has to be some kind of repetition, some kind of... I mean, it's like you look at Hartwig's landscapes, or you can look at Constable. Well, Constable is also an interesting thing. In its very simplest form, he has always this L composition, which repeats the format, basically.
Yeah.
And of course, there are other things going on, obviously, but that's the basic structure.
This is a fractal concept. You're making the painting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller.
Right, yeah. Yeah, but that's a repetition.
Yeah, wonderful. I try now to invent my landscapes without any clue of what reality is. I try to recreate inner landscapes. It's very difficult, and I'm getting hooked up in how I organize my stones so that I have my flat surface and the deep of the painting at once. Mm. It's not that easy. So it's getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller at the place.
But then you're working with that repetition of ground shape inward and inward?
And I tried to discuss it once with, gave you examples how I think in composition for one of my paintings, what lines I have in there. So I compose a landscape around figures so that everything gets into balance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, about that.
Yeah, but then that's also, I mean, one thing I'd love to do is go back to Iceland and paint there. Because you have, that's really a landscape where you can you can do these, let's say, naturalist studies, empirical studies of the actual landscape. And because of the shapes are so weird and strange, you can change them and use them to your advantage in the composition. Because you can learn the language to the degree that you can start.
You have to learn your landscape. Hmm. It's not about jumping out and taking some photographs. You have to be there all the time. Yeah. And when it becomes your inner landscape, then you have a certain amount of freedom to create the surrounding for your thoughts. Hmm. So,
but you need that basic structure, because some kind of basic structure there has to be. If you have this horizontal landscape, you have to work with a vertical lines as well, so you have that.
We have gravity on Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
We are so used to it. Mm. It can be a problem. But this is why we have, this is a format like that, it's about gravity. Mm. It could be different, it could be round. But we have our rectangles because we are building houses with wood and we have gravity. And this is the main subject now when we compose. Mm. How what are we doing with gravity? And when you are building a house and you're taking a timber of wood, standing it perpendicular up, and you have to support it from the side so that it doesn't fall. And then you are into landscape composition already. So it's about what it's called. It's the technological part of architecture when you're constructing.
I don't know.
It's a constructing work. Hmm. And the house has to stand after certain rules. You cannot decide, now I'm deciding this. It's round, it's flying. No, it's not, it's falling apart.
Yeah, and if you don't have those general structures, you cannot start working with rhythm and imbalance either. I mean, this is something I learned from you know, Leo Carus, one of the sculptors that worked at the mausoleum, the origin of the word mausoleum, which was the grave monument of King Mausolus and his wife. And then I looked at that frieze by Leo Carus with that fight, and in immediately it's completely chaotic. But then when I started studying, it's a clear triangle here, figure there. It's not, and then a triangle.
It's a rhythm without an end.
Yes, and then it's across, I don't know how many feet, if it's 50 or 60 feet or something like that. So in addition to these triangles and the standing figures and other things, obviously, there's this long waves going through the whole composition.
And you can go around and around and around.
Yeah, exactly.
But here, our composition stops. So this gives you a cue how to compose, that you know where the painting is ending.
Hmm.
You have to have a reason for it.
Hmm.
And this is also a problem with your symmetry when you're placing a motif in the middle of your canvas. Why is the painting stopping here and here and here and here? This is the theme of composition.
Hmm.
You have to make an end for your world all the time.
Yeah.
There's a reason for your canvas.
I remember we're looking at the, don't need to mention names, but there was a composition, and one figure was sort of symbolic, and one figure was going upwards like this, face up. And then another commented that the problem was that the energy just goes totally out of the picture. And of course, Adnerman has been working with these things where if something is driving upwards, he bends it so it doesn't go out of the painting, but it stays within.
That is a reason why the painting is ending.
Yeah. What do you call those when you have those pressure boilers? You need to keep the pressure within the painting, within the format.
Yeah.
You need to stop the corners, you need to think about the diagonals, and you need to...
This is composition.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
But when you're standing out there, and you try to make your first brush stroke, where would this first brush stroke usually be? Because it's your first problem.
Yeah. Well, it depends entirely on the color of the canvas and what kind of where the focus is. I mean,
a tree or the horizon? Do you have an horizon?
Hmm.
I think the main problem in painting, as a Renaissance man saw it, was the horizon, because the horizon is cutting the painting into halves.
Hmm.
And then your problem begins.
Then
one part is light and the other part is dark.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Hmm.
It's boring.
Yeah, you need to see that connection. And that's the fantastic thing with, again, with Hertwig. You know, have you been to Bergen and seen that thing that he made when he was 25, about... What is it called? It's like a smith working in this very strange little house up in the mountains.
But it's a big one.
Yes, I think it's his biggest work. And then you see...
It's so wonderful.
At the top there, these heavy, dark clouds pushing the attention in. And of course, the dark soil, the dark landscape, pushing the attention in like that. It's forcing you.
It's completely crazy painting technique,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
No clue how. I think he didn't have a plan at all.
But
he wanted to paint a feeling, not another composition there, and he was really struggling. You see the struggle, and this is the beautiful thing in the painting.
Yeah. But also, I mean, this is why. Whenever I do these master classes for the cave, analyzing compositions, because I think when you start talking about these things, if you start with talking about the feeling and emotion and what it expresses, so-called, and these things, then people think they can go straight to that. So I intentionally just talk about this connects with this because that balances something that is here. And if you start learning that, then you can add some kind of narrative, some kind of story or feeling or emotion or mood or whatever. And I think when you look at that work by Hertwig, you see that the next thing also to do is it connects earth and sky through that color or the value being repeated. So he gets that connection. Because I think that that's a problem with, I mean, Constable had to make money, so he made these exhibition paintings. But then you see it's a too strong disconnect between sky and landscape, like two, a little bit two separate things.
For example, his beginning, the landscape was far away.
Hmm.
You yes. don't get a connection to the small houses and the mountains in the back and the small clouds.
The church.
Yeah, of course. So you have to go into the motive.
Yeah.
Right into the motive.
Yeah.
It's not there. You have to be surrounded by the motive.
Yeah. Oh, God, I
see. But it's... When we are painting a landscape, and it can take months or years for my part, then you are not in the same mood all the time. Or so it's not about feelings at all. Yeah?
No.
But you have to have a solution for the white canvas problem. And my canvas is never white.
Mm.
But you have to begin somewhere. And then you're collecting what you're and showing what you're able to do, and it's not about feeling it at all. It's the difference between art and kitsch. In kitsch, you know everything, and the one who sees the painting has the feelings. In art, it's the other way around. The artist has the feelings, and the one observing the work is standing and knows everything.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary.
But when you're now trying to find a solution for that, for the one horizon, then it's a good way to alternate. This is the Renaissance method. Between sky and earth.
Hmm.
And again, sky, water, a reflection, and earth.
Yeah.
And you can do it as often as you like, because there could be a sky and earth and clouds and earth and reflection and earth, for example. And then you have a rhythm, a horizontal rhythm in your surface. And this you can do to a certain degree with the perpendicular lines too, or with your, you should be very careful with diagonal, with binding the corners.
Mm.
Yeah, you have to have a reason for this. So it should interfere with some other lines after other rules, but never get trapped in symmetry. And this is the problem with most of the composition lines people find in paintings. They're always symmetrical, and this is the problem.
Hmm.
They're wrong. They're all wrong.
Yeah, because you have then you're back to
the sacred geometry. You know.
Well, but then you're back to being aware of these, the basic sort of rigid structure, but not only having that because it becomes too stiff, because you have to have that rhythmic connection and these repetitions.
Now, I think the best landscape composer is Vermeer. And you think one landscape. I don't talk about this...
talk about the compositional principles.
Urban scape. He is the best in showing how landscape should be done. And the beautiful painting in Vienna shows it at its best, because you have these not symmetrical lines in a five angle, so the golden ratio, and you have the map on the wall where he shows the rules for landscape paintings, all these small landscape. Heaven and earth, and heaven and earth, and heaven and earth. And in the middle is folded a five angle with the cut in the middle between the Protestantic and Catholic Netherlands. So it's meaning something, and it's the symbol of balance without open symmetry.
Mm.
So it's beautifully composed, and please mirror it at home. You will see how it's falling apart. It's not balanced at all when you see it in a mirror. So he is absolutely perfect as a geometrist, as a mathematician.
Mm.
And this is the first rule. You have to be a mathematician. Otherwise, you cannot read a painting. This is what Leonardo wrote. You cannot read me when you are not a mathematician.
Mm. Yeah, but then you have advanced mathematics, like in Borg Island by Hertwig. Because you really have there what you're talking about, land, sky,
he made it, and sky and earth,
and the repetition. There's even this thing that we know in the right bottom corner. You have that little landscape, totally separate landscape, which is the third horizon, I guess.
You see, you're a little painter with your little easel and your happy canvas.
Happy little landscape.
Painting landscape outside. What are you doing? You're taking your car to a riverside or a lake. You don't want to go that far because everything's very heavy. And you're placing your little canvas and your little happy easel and trying to paint. There is nothing above you. There's nothing beneath you. It's absolutely nice. It's like you have the biggest camera in the world, these landscape photographers. You have that much lenses with you, and you see the mountains, and you do not dare to go up because it's too heavy. So you are getting an imagery of standing beneath a mountain on the riverside or the lake, and it's very, very flat all the time. You have many horizons which are not really that challenging.
Mm.
And you do not see much of the lake because you're standing in front of it, it's some water, and you have... So it's very, very stupid to begin with this. And you learn when you go up how to dramatize your composition when you're going up to a mountain and you see that there is a gap and there is the abyss, and you look down. It's becoming bigger and bigger, and you can do it in a landscape too, because then your foreground should not be a foreground. I hate this concept, foreground, middle ground, background. It's stupid. You have to bind everything together, or it doesn't work. So you have your foreground, which is a landscape in its own right. Then you have your abyss, which is, you can go around maybe to another top, and then you have again a written there. And you, a method to paint this abyss is to make it even higher, deeper, then you're falling really into it. So paint a landscape there, then kind of nothingness or sky, and a landscape there deeper in. And make this more open, and it will dramatize everything. And this is what you see in Hertwig. Because he's making a little landscape which has another horizon in the foreground.
Absolutely.
And then he's making abyss in a sky water, and beginning once again, and nobody knows why, because the island is not has no definition anymore, how big or small it is, because when you're looking at the landscape in the front, you don't see how small or big it is. There are no figures or trees or something lovely in there, or happy.
But then, yeah, but that's also a challenge. And it's the same thing as with trying to go into the late technique of Titian too early. Things generally fall apart. If you try to do what Hertwig is doing, and you think you can start there, then it will very quickly fall apart because it becomes just something that is surreal or something that is just invented.
Yeah, but when you are learning about values, then you're young, you think you know everything because you know little. And this is everything for you. And you come, you're coming with your values to others and try to find your values in the rest of the world. And you don't find it that much. So you think you are better. And then you're learning about other themes and values too. And then you're seeing, no, maybe I'm not that good. I should learn these too. Mm. But the rest of the world is not good. And when you're getting older and you are wise, then you know that you are nothing in between many, many values and many people who are struggling to find their way. Mm. So don't begin as an old man or woman. You should have your life on your own. And you have to find your way through. It takes a long time. But when you're wanting to make landscape, go out first.
Yeah, because I think... Yeah, if you should try it, I mean, for example, with the Borg Island, this thing about cutting away half of the mountain when he paints the painting and making that foreground which has this horizon, and suddenly there's another landscape in the sky that is the water. So it's two things at the same time. And that can easily become some, that's where it can become surrealism, is if you should start with that. So I think it's in that sense, you can be aware of it. And you can try to slowly incorporate some of these elements, but it has to be sort of have to hold it a bit back so you don't go too fast into it because you won't be able to juggle all of these things at once.
Yeah, he was, is it the world, soaked up with his surroundings. It was his inner landscape after a while because it was out there. So you can absolutely... invent your painting without standing out there. Mm. You can stay in your workshop and paint from memory. Well, but you have to have this input first. You have to have this memory first.
Yeah, because it's. I think that's...
It's like the old joke when the mother of 1800s joke, mother of a talented girl, goes to the academy with a painting of a naked man, goes to the academy to ask professors if they could take her girl into the academy, and the professor is asking, is this painted after a model? No, after memory. So... Yeah. I would prefer to paint after model first.
So what do you think about this whole idea? But that was Degas, wasn't it? Had this idea about that school. You stand in front of the model in the ground floor, and then in year two you stand in the first floor. You go down, look at the model, go up and paint again, and then in the third year you go one floor up, go down to look at the model, and then up again to paint. Because then you have. I guess the idea is that you have internalized that memory and you can, because that's one thing, whom did I talk with that about? How, it just struck me that one thing is to paint from photo, which, and as Odd-Nordrum said also, it's not necessarily a problem to paint from photo, but it's equally, well, it is an equally big problem to think like a photo when you're painting.
What are you trying to find in a photograph?
Exactly.
Most people print it today on paper, and this is really a problem. There are people who are trying to paint after a screen, which is really a problem. When I used photographs, and it's often quite good to have a memory outside of you at home, when you want to see a certain form or pattern or surface. But then I used a small, what was it called? Diapositive slides.
Yeah, okay.
And I looked at them with a kind of viewer, magnifying glass, taking it away and painting. So it was a little bit just like painting after a reality, but because there you can decide how dark or light it is, and then take another maybe photograph from another place like that, looking at that, I'm understanding I'm wrong on this path, and taking it aside. When you have it on paper or on the side of your painting, then you don't have the contrast, and it becomes papery at once, and you're trying to copy. And this is really, really a problem.
Yeah, you stiffen to do exactly what is there, and there you don't get that change of lighting or change of... You see it as two-dimensional.
It will not work. Mm.
But I was that's what I was thinking. I sort of lost my thread when I talked about photo. That when you stand and you go out to paint in front of the motif, and if you do that throughout the whole so-called process, which is I don't know if I like that word, but it can be kind of, this is perhaps a bit esoteric, but it can be kind of like painting after a photo, that you have to stand and do exactly what you see.
This is what you learn in certain painting schools. Don't use which a camera, ones? Be a camera.
Right. And which schools are we talking about?
No, there are several private schools who want money from you.
Yeah. But what do you think about that? It just struck me that being like a seal it when it comes to standing outside painting all the time can become a problem equally as much as painting from a photo.
Absolutely, yeah. It is a problem. It will not be a problem in landscape, but you're not learning landscape painting in these schools because these methods do not work out there. Mm. Because when you're standing out there, you don't have your gray or black box and the time. Nothing on Earth is moving so fast as Earth. The landscape is changing that fast. Yeah, you don't have the time. That's not even 5 minutes to get it. Sorry, you're not rescued by any method. You have to get it at once. Yeah. And then you have, on the one side, the chance to be impressionist or to have a concept of landscape on your own. And then you have to be a creator and not a human camera. Hmm. This is what I try to talk about. It's not about depicting a landscape, which is there, quite touristic, but you have to organize your flat canvas. And you have to have an opinion about structure and why this kind of landscape is important for you and all of this. And then you are making something which gives you a certain mood and should develop over time, even when finished.
Yeah, it's the same principle as when you read Dickens or you read Dostoevsky, that everything that these figures are doing are really, really important. And what you're talking about then is to show that you find this motif there to be really, really important and not just something that you stand there copying.
This is something very wise. This thought about every little decision in your life is important. Hmm. You're always deciding for your whole life, in every minute.
And certainly not when it comes to painting. The work that you shall make and leave behind you.
Your little, you're not smoking, mean neither.
We can start.
Your little cigarette outside is a decision for life.
Yes. I wanted to start smoking when I was 35, but I figured I didn't have the money for it.
Yeah, but now I tried these smoking pipes because Hartwig loved it so much.
That's a good reason.
And he loved his tobacco and didn't have it all the time. So I tried it, and it's giving you the right feeling.
Oh, I can imagine that. That's that meditation just...
And you fill see
yourself with
when
fire.
You're outside, you're seeing the smoke in the air. You can.
You're making small clouds. This is completely.
It's so wonderful when you're thinking about him, and you try to imagine how he felt.
Yeah, and there's several things to talk about when it comes to Hartwig, but first of all, he must have been an immensely intelligent person. Extremely intelligent.
Yeah, this is why he decided not to have contact to people anymore. Especially Germans.
Yeah, and this love. But I was thinking about, speaking of these things that are, well, I mean, that's how you should develop too. I guess you start with so-called more naturalistic approach, getting proportions, all of this placement correct. But then you understand, well, you have to get some more rhythmic connection. It has to be not just then and there, but you have to give it a so-called eternal perspective, which Hertwig does. But where did he get it from? He must have seen Prince of Leonardo.
It's obvious nature is never right. It doesn't seem, look right when you look at
the motif. Yeah, but come on, he educated himself in Düsseldorf, and you have that, which is a wonderful technique, this whole Düsseldorf way of painting, where you see them paint these rocks, and you get these strokes that sort of make things more square. Yeah,
but this is how Stone Age people painted.
Yeah, but that might be, but I'm just thinking about, if you obviously understand that nature is never straight, everything is a bit off, and so, why are there so few people who understand it? I mean, did he see something by Leonardo, or was it just the thing that a very intelligent person will see? Because you have, I mentioned it many times, Li Cheng in China in the 10th century, which is very, very similar to Hertwig. He does these things with the perspective going like this, manipulating it and bringing the mountain so that it almost falls forward and doesn't just go straight up. So this is something that maybe it's just that you're very intelligent. That's when you can see it.
No, everyone has it. It's a biological condition. Everyone has it to see something in something. When you're looking at a stone or a wood structure, you're beginning to see faces, creatures, landscape. And you can develop from everything, from every little landscape, a bigger one. When you have your little pound of water, some stones, like Mr. Nerdrum once also described in an interview, the landscape of a child, smaller, the place where you're playing, and this you can develop into something bigger, and this is what Hertwig did. It's not a matter of size anymore. Your little stone is a big mountain, your big mountain is a little stone, and you learn something about forms and rhythm. But you're seeing something different in the structure of a stone than there is. It's only a stone. But you see landscape, faces, animals. So, and this is a human condition. You have to protect yourself when you're outside in the, as a Stone Age hunter. You try to find your meal for the evening. So you try to find animals you can eat, or animals you have to hide yourself for. So you are always forced into seeing something. This is why painting is so interesting. Brush strokes on a surface, and it gets interesting at once because we are biologically forced into seeing something in it. Mm. And it could be something of value even. This is what painting is all about. I don't think it's intelligence that you can see it. Intelligence that you can create it and be and not depicting nature, but becoming nature by painting as a creator. You are God creating. You are nature.
Well, I'm thinking about something when it comes to Hertwig, that there are two things that he does that is sort of a, well, one thing is that connection between these elements. Like you said, he, in some way, he brings the sky down on earth and the earth up into the sky.
This is so, the main rule in the Renaissance time.
Yeah.
Look at Raphael. He's doing it all the time.
Hmm.
And in the rhythm of the composition, in the ratio of the five angle.
Right. But there's another thing that, that Hertwig does, which is, I'm still trying to understand, because it somehow is sort of flattening the image. Where, speaking of how he...
Wonderful.
There are small things that are in the front and large things in the back.
Great, so he great. He's breaking the rules.
Yeah, it's like he mixes sky and earth, and he foreground and background.
I tried it the other way around. I really tried it the other way around. Big forms in the front, small back.
Yeah.
It's so horrible.
It becomes a disconnect.
So bad.
Yeah, because of disconnect.
You have to set yourself in a difficult situation as a painter.
Yeah.
Don't try to find a solution for a problem or the easy solution. Now I shall produce a sunset for selling. But give yourself the chance to solve a problem. So try to find a painterly problem there and try to solve it on the canvas. And not in drawings before you're beginning with your painting. Try to solve it on your canvas so that you have the energy of all your efforts on the canvas.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like what Caravaggio must have done with, I mean, when you see
Caravaggio had another approach. He had so many solutions and no problems at all in the painting.
Yeah. Well, when you see the x-rays of the Martin of Matthew, it's like, what is it, 6-7 at least, fully painted figures that it paints over and completely changes the whole composition.
It went so fast for him.
Jeez.
But he had another approach, because when you see at his figures, they work as silhouettes too. When you're shining through them, when they're standing like silhouettes, they are working as a form. Mm. And then he is breaking this form in a later Baroque tradition up into light and dark, and in between sits the color. That is the color of light, the color of dark, and in between sits the what is flesh or clothes, also the color of this.
Hmm.
So it's very simple to build up a figure like that. It would be much more difficult to, as you have these South American mummies when they are bound up and sitting like that. You have no silhouette at all. It's only an egg, the beginning and the end. It's the egg. Try to paint something like that, even with light and shadow. It will not work. So spread up your model. And think about seeing it as a silhouette first, and when it works, you can break it up with light and dark. This will always work.
Yeah, that's the basic Greek principle. You have the totality of the form.
Yeah, then, on different levels.
Yeah, but then you must be careful because...
And then the most important rule is, everything normal people would consider as important has to be in the dark. All the faces, all the eyes, which give so much impression. All these beautiful things are in a shadow. Mm. And the most important things, dirty feet or asses or what else, give it to me. And then you have a good Baroque painting.
Yeah, I don't think I have much to add to that, because that's the basic idea here.
Yeah, but we wanted to talk about landscape. What are we giving to people?
Well, we're talking about the inner landscape and the human being, so it's...
This is why we are painting landscape. We want to have our models in the surrounding, not like butterflies in a flat collection of, flat butterflies, and they are dead. And
it's that they're speaking of certain schools.
No, you
have that model standing there with a stick, and it's supposed, and you don't know anymore why he's standing there with the stick, but he's still standing there with the stick. So,
The other day when I saw some paintings, beautifully made figures, and they are glued to a certain nothingness, which could be landscape or not, and it's so artistic. So why are they naked?
Yeah, exactly. You have to always think about why is are the things like they are. And I mean, this is also coming back to landscape, how this is what Hartwig does, which is so wonderful, that he animates nature so they become these agents and not just a tree standing there. You know, it's I told you that story about, you know, that Norwegian painter Christian Skretsvik was is okay, but he had painted these landscapes with this forest with some pine trees or something like that. And he ends up staying in the same hotel as Edvard Munch, and he knows Munch, so he thinks, aha, I'll get some feedback on my work. And Munch comes in and he looks at that painting and he says, oh, well, those pine trees are painted just like pine trees are supposed to be painted. Just kills it.
Because there were no problem. There was no problem.
Yes.
Yeah, but we have a problem as cage painters. I know we discussed it a lot, and we got it even in our definition of cage, the sunset. How many paintings of sunsets did you make in your life?
I have to admit, not so many.
Why? You're a kitsch painter. You should paint sunsets all the time.
Exactly.
Why are not you are not doing sunsets?
We could do a separate dark thing on that. Let me think about that. No, but that's true. That's true. Yeah, that's a speaking of kitsch, that's a problem. Or that can be a problem, that you are so concerned with these ideas and you don't notice that you're not actually doing it in practice.
But how many good sunsets are out there as a painting? Also in history.
Mm.
It's a very difficult problem. We love to look at a sunset, but we don't have a clue how to organize a sunset.
Mm. So how should we organize a sunset?
Yeah, but what is the problem with the sunset? It's beautiful. It's blue and red and yellow and greenish.
Yeah, go for it.
And you have a reflection in your lake, and it's the same greenish and blue and red. And then you have a silhouette.
Hmm. Well, I guess it's the same problem that we've been talking about all along, that you just think of it as more as a copy machine, and you're not editing or manipulating.
But even when you're standing out there and you try to make your sunset, and it's the sunset of your life. So you have to paint it in red and green and blue, and it's beautiful. And you're trying to depict a landscape or a beautiful figure, and everything's black. It was really a problem for me for many years. I didn't figure it out. It's not possible to find a solution there, because when you have your land in your scape, then it's only dull and dark, and your figure is dull and dark, and it doesn't even work in photographs from your holidays, because everything's dull and dark. You have to get light into the silhouette. And this is what I was trying to talk about when we talked now about Caravaggio. You have the silhouette and you are breaking it up in light and dark. But when you have your motif with light coming to you, you have only your silhouette.
Mm.
So I tried to figure out what could be a solution there. And I found a solution and I tried it out on several paintings, and it works.
And what is it?
We talked about it.
Yeah, but tell me now.
But the problem is, it doesn't work here. You have to go to the north. I call it for the midnight sun method. Midnight sun, when it's not another sun. So there were tourists coming to the north of Norway and were disappointed that there is no special midnight sun coming out of the horizon, but it's the same sun.
Yeah.
So they tried to get the money back. Really? No.
It's the same sun as home. Yeah. But what you're talking about is some kind of manipulation.
Now, it's wonderful. When you're trying to make your sketch, you have all the time of the world on your mountain of choice. So you can go up and try to make a sketch. And it's really funny. I tried to figure out where the midnight sun is, because this will be your nearly sunset, and it will be beautiful. And everything's changing very fastly. So it was very easy to paint the right side of my motif at first, then the middle of the painting, and then the left side. Because when the sun is coming from the left, you have light in your landscape and motif.
Mm-hmm.
Then the sun is setting, you get your sunset. And then the sun is coming up, and you have your light on the other side of the mountains. And then you have a painting which really shines.
Right. That's fantastic.
We should go to the north of Norway together and try it out. Maybe in front of a camera or not. Should we do it?
We should do it.
I would like to demonstrate it on spot. It's a wonderful method. You get your sunset and the wonderful mountainscape around.
Yeah, because I think this is something fundamental, because a major problem, I think, also for very skilled painters is that they are still stuck in, I have to be a naturalist, I have to copy what is there, and if I start manipulating or changing, then that's
not... It becomes something cosmic.
It's
an illusion too, and it works. And you can be very creative, I hate creativity, in finding your spot. But what are you doing when you're not in the north of Norway? I didn't figure out.
Well.
Without midnight sun.
Yeah.
And it's not a special sun. What are you doing? And I give you a solution.
Mm-hmm.
Something I tried out, and it works. You don't figure it out. You have to turn around. So you have a motif with the sun from one side. But there is a motif behind you, maybe. So turn around, get this motif too into your painting.
On the other side.
The sun is coming from the other side.
Yeah.
And then you wait for your sunset. And you have a composition.
Right.
It would work out there, but now the wind is blowing, so I cannot demonstrate it.
Yeah. That's a wonderful idea.
You have to paint very, very fast.
Yeah.
So it's not something for the one who considers, you can't come back, but the sunset will never come back.
I think this is
you have to have bad weather for your sunset and good weather for the light in your painting. And think about it, there should not be always light in your landscape. Maybe it's better without light at certain parts when you have a cloudy day.
Bring in French naturalism, because that's where the gray weather comes in.
Shining up. I'm not talking about isthmus. But I see, there is no good French painting tradition, and there is no English music. I always say, well, there is no good French painting. All these impressionists were from the north of France, or were lived there, so they came from the Normandy, and this is not France. This is Norway.
There are a couple, but I guess they weren't French. You have Chardin, you have Georges Latour. Georges Latour was from Lorraine, so.
Yeah, but
he was a Lorraine painter.
I will not talk about French painting, because it's not giving me anything.
Mm-hmm. But the wonderful irony here is that when a painter thinks, I need to be exact and get it exact like it is, and if you start doing the things that you're describing now, then that's not how the old masters worked, but that's actually what they did.
But when you try to paint exactly like it is, you presume that the world is perfect. Is it perfect for you?
Right.
I want to change it. I can do it in painting.
That's better than to do it through political activism. It costs less lives.
How many tubes of paint I had to kill for? Of course. How many polyester should die for this coat? I know. Yeah, but you should really try it out, and we can try it out together. Fine?
That'd be awesome.